Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're closing out Season 9, which is not a great season of Criminal Minds. And it only gets worse from here?
Well, what I was going to say, it started and ended the same way.
No, nothing could be as bad as the start of this season. The end of the season's a pretty terrible two-parter, but I maintain that it is not crazy to describe The Inspiration and The Inspired as, like, the worst episodes that this show has ever done. You might say I'm being hyperbolic, but I really don't think that I am. They're just so loathsome. All right, let's get right into it with the first episode, which, as I understand it, is Fatal?
It's called Fatal.
Yeah, you're supposed to read the synopsis now. That's how we normally do this.
It's the end of a long week again.
It is.
The BAU returns to California to track down a Long Beach serial killer obsessed with Greek mythology after two people receive death threats and are subsequently found dead from arsenic poison. Meanwhile, Hotch grows concerned after Jack asks him to participate in his school's upcoming career day.
And with good cause. That's a freaky thing to have to do when you hunt serial killers for a living.
Mm-hmm.
As the show points out. But then it ends up just being a funny joke. So, you know.
Yes. Well, this is what I call the CSI. This is one of those CSI endings.
Yeah.
This show has. Well, you're the one that pointed it out.
Really?
The CSI endings. Don't
you remember? The horrible irony. Yes.
Yes, the horrible irony, right? And it's Bruce Zimmerman again.
Yeah, like, no, we've talked CSI. About in the past about how the CSI, it's not enough to catch a criminal. At the end of the episode, you also have to find out that, no, the person you killed was actually trying to give you the lottery ticket that you dropped that won $10 million. Like, it's never enough that someone died and it's horrible and now we've caught the guy. There also had to be no reason to kill the person, and it's all just a ridiculous O. Henry bit of nonsense. And yeah, that's exactly how this week's episode ends.
And as I said, the same guy, and he worked for CSI Miami.
Yeah, so that's just what he knows how to write, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a limited author, but he definitely knows how to write a very specific kind of story.
The O. Henry ending for criminal serial killers, you know?
But yeah, just the fact that this episode ends with them saying, no, Kevin from The Office, he actually saved your life because the car you were supposed to be in had a terrible accident. I'm like, come on.
And everybody died.
I know.
That's all I could think about when I came to the end of it. Because I did remember it.
It's so silly.
But I came to the end and I just went,
oh, God. Well, no, and it's funny because, and you know what my response is, but what do you call it? Don't you realize that, I mean, unless, like, a bomb was planted on the shuttle or the shuttle's brakes failed or something, isn't it possible that in the 30 seconds, like, because he wasn't waiting at the curb, so they drove up to his house to get on the shuttle, and they honked and they waited for 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever. They left, but if he had been bright-eyed and bushy-tailed ready to get on that shuttle, they would have been driving to the airport 2 minutes earlier. Maybe they wouldn't have gotten into an accident.
Well, not only that, here's what's so stupid about it, really stupid about it, is, excuse me, that shuttle crashed and everybody died in it. You mean he didn't know?
How did he not hear about that?
Everybody heard about it. I mean, that's the most bizarre. That was, to me, the most bizarre part. Everybody had to know. And he had to have gone to his friend and said, thank God.
God, he
got drunk last night or I'd be dead.
Yes. That's absolutely what would have happened in real life.
In real life. So.
Yeah. Like, you can't. It's Los Angeles. Sorry, San Diego?
Los Angeles.
It's Long Beach. Long Beach, but Los Angeles is not so big and there isn't so much crime there that if an airport shuttle was in a crash that killed six people, it wouldn't have made the news.
It would have made the news. It would have been one of those headlines. It would have made CNN. It would have made Fox. It would have been on all of the channels.
There's no way this guy...
We would have heard of it in Canada.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty big deal, an airport shuttle killing a bunch of people. Like, whenever, you know, a sports team, like a small sports team has a crash on their bus and 10 people get killed, we hear about it all across the country and into Canada. So, no, the idea that he couldn't have heard about this is just crazy ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no way. There's just no way.
It was the stupidest thing about the episode.
It is. It is a very stupid thing about the episode. Also, that in an amazing coincidence, every single person, like, because he goes after five people who in a row got there, and they all drove? Like, I don't know, like, it's weird that I
and
go to a...
How have you followed all five of them?
Well, I think they want us to believe that every single one of them, like, drove up to the parking lot of that coffee shop and got into that coffee shop and then immediately got back out to their car, so he was able to watch them and take down each of their license plates. I mean, it doesn't really make sense. No. Like, I'm trying to offer a justification.
And besides, how... He's not a cop.
How did... I know, they're like, he went and did some research at the DMV. Yeah, people can't go and do research at the DMV.
The DMV.
That's not a real thing. You can't look at a... You can't look
Maybe
at a license
plate.
Maybe
in Long Beach it is.
No,
I don't know.
There is no way.
In Canada...
I mean, maybe he could hire a shady private detective or something, but in most places, there is no way for a non-government official to see a license plate and then find out whose license plate that is. Again, maybe he hired a shady private detective. You don't know?
Yeah, but how much time he only had? It's only...
No, he sat down and he wrote down all the license plates. That's the thing. Like,
what I was saying, it's been...
No, it's been, like, weeks and weeks.
Yeah, months or
weeks or months. Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if he found a shady private detective, I guess that guy has, like, a friend or somebody he bribes at the DMV to just quickly run a plate or something like that. But, yeah, it is a little, because they talk about it like it's the easiest thing in the world, right, to find this information out. Like, that it would be the easiest thing in the world to get that information. No, you
should have gone and found out who searched for those license plate numbers at the DMV and then found out it was this guy and then found out that he was selling the information to the shady private detective. Then they should have gone to the shady private detective
and it would have found the guy a lot faster. But instead, they find out who it is in a much more plausible way. Garcia checks every single person who has gotten a terminal diagnosis at that hospital in the past 3 months. And she immediately has that information at her fingertips because there is no such thing as medical privacy laws in the world of criminal minds. That is a bonkers thing to search for in an episode of television. I'll just get the list of everyone who got diagnosed with cancer. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Sure. Why not?
Sure, why not?
Why not, right?
Yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, that's just what... In many ways, that's just what Criminal Minds is.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a fun piece of trivia about this episode.
Okay.
It stars the guy who played Kevin from The Office. And in a completely, like, an amazing coincidence, right when he was starting out as an actor, Matt Gubler was an extra in an episode of Arrested Development. Yeah, there's an episode of Arrested Development where it's the one where they're having the, I believe it's the second auction at the Country Club. So it's season two. They're doing another auction at the Country Club. Lindsay and Tobias have an open marriage, and she's going out to meet Rob Corddry playing a TV star, Long story short, she gets hit with a tranquilizer and the TV star thinks he's going to be accused of murdering somebody. And two hikers walk out of the woods and see him, like, carrying off this lady. And one of the hikers is quite visibly Matt Gubler. Like, you can tell it's him right away. And the thing that's an interesting coincidence is Kevin from The Office was also a guest star in that week's episode. So they were both in an episode of Arrested Development together a decade before, or like 12 years before this episode aired. So that is my fun piece of trivia about this episode. I don't know, probably like a straight decade of this episode. And like the next year, one of them would get The Office and the other one would get Criminal Minds. So it worked out quite well for both of them. A weird piece of trivia. But yeah, it's so funny because they're able to... and it's so strange how the guys behave, because I don't know anyone... first off, I feel like arsenic doesn't hit you like a ton of bricks like that. I mean, maybe I don't understand how these things work, but doesn't arsenic... don't you, like, feel sick and get sicker?
Yeah, and you'd probably go to the hospital because
that's what I'm saying.
Sick.
It's like the guy, he was out drinking in a bar, and then he found in his pocket a guy said, "You will be dead in 24 hours, and there's nothing you could do about it." I'm like, why would he not run to the hospital?
Yeah,
Doesn't that seem like that would be your natural inclination in that?
Well, yeah, when so you start
I'm not the
to
only
feel
one
sick.
Who
like,
thinks that, right?
Like, well, yeah, because as far as I know, arsenic
takes a while.
Takes time.
Yeah.
Or you get sick first and the rest of it. So,
and even if you'd be dead, like maybe it was a mega dose of arsenic and the guy would be dead in like 8 hours. Fine. But the minute you started feeling sick and you've received a note saying you're going to be killed.
Die. Yeah.
Wouldn't you run to the hospital or call 911? Like the guy drove to the police station instead of calling 911. It's a really weird thing for somebody to do. I'm glad you agree with me on this one. Because
it was just like...
it's a weird thing to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, okay. For heaven's sakes, did they not all watch DOA?
Yeah, like DOA. You think you start to feel sick for a second, you rush to the hospital. Oh, you've got... God, what kind of poisoning was it? Radium poisoning or whatever.
Whatever it was incurable. And...
yeah, like radium poison will kill you real fast. Yeah, like, so I don't doubt that part of it. But yeah, like, I don't understand someone who gives you a note that's saying you're going to be dead in 12 hours or whatever, and by tomorrow, and you're feeling sick and not immediately frigging rushing to the hospital. Like, that's just a weird response. And the thing is, the episode doesn't change at all. They just don't get to do the horror movie opening of he gets in the police station and then he dies anyway. And da-da. Like, it's the same episode if he gets the note and dies in the hospital. And they find a lady who this also happened to last week. Right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's just, they have a guy behave nonsensically just so they can get what they think is a catchy, fun opening, even though it doesn't really make sense. So, yeah. Problematic episode in a bunch of ways. Yeah. Especially the O. Henry ending. That O. Henry ending bothers me so much. And if you don't, I don't want to assume this. Dear listener, if you don't know who O. Henry is, he was a short story writer from the turn of the century who wrote a lot of stories with hilarious twist endings.
Yes.
Like, he is the king of hilarious twist endings. Not all of his stories have hilarious twist endings. His most famous story, The Taking of Red Chief, does not have a hilarious twist ending. It's just a funny comedy story. But he did specialize in stories that right at the end is like, oh no, the irony. Like, that was his whole
thing. Oh, yes. Like, there's the guy who sells his fob watch.
The Gift of the Magi.
The watch to buy his wife this comb for her hair, and she cuts
her
hair and sells her hair to buy him the chain to hold
to
his
put
watch.
On his watch. Yes. Yeah, yeah, he sells his own. It's cute,
yeah.
Right? It's
cute.
But you know, really, they still had love, so it was fine.
Yeah,
oh yeah, so. that's O. Henry. He loved irony, and it was the thing for which he was most famous. And so that is why we are constantly referring to O. Henry. If you weren't,
if you weren't
familiar, and yes, yeah. That is who the. In case you're wondering, yes, 100%. That is who the candy bar is named after. I don't know why they named a candy bar after him, but they did.
But.
Yeah, that's like a guy who wrote short stories about irony. Yeah, he got a candy bar named after him. Don't know why. I can make no logic to that whatsoever. But yeah, it's funny because you, I actually, the one thing I'll say about this episode is I kind of do buy, like, the ridiculous levels they go to, right? Of trying to figure out, like, the circuitous logic that results in them figuring out what the killer's motivation probably is. Normally I would be like, isn't that a stretch? This time I'm actually like, no, like, the whole warning people of death and dropping the lengths of cord on somebody, right? I get that this guy is leaving enough clues, like Riddler style, that they're able to figure it out. Like, so many times I've criticized them for saying, you can't make that leap. But it's like, this guy is, his obsession is so specific and he drops so many clues that on a certain level, I'm like, yeah, I buy that. I buy that they could get there. I'm not going to criticize that at all this week. What I will say, though, is I don't know why he thought that poisoning the water cooler at a guy's work is a good way to kill a specific person.
Well, yeah, because you should be killing a whole bunch of people.
You could be killing. You could have killed 30 people.
Assuming that arsenic works that fast.
Well, no. Well, my point is they show in the episode that arsenic takes a while to work, and he must have dumped in so much arsenic that a single glass from the water cooler was enough to kill this guy. So that thing would have to be just made of arsenic at this point. And who knows how many people are going to drink from that. It's like, it's a very reckless way to do what he's going to do.
Particularly since he's interested in fate.
Yeah, right?
Like the fate of these specific people.
Yeah, it seems like it's way more reckless. In the same way, like, the time he sits next to a guy in a bar and poisons his drink, yep, 100%, that's the only guy you're going to kill. You've done this exactly right. But then he's like, drops off candy at a lady's house? What if she gave it to her grandchildren?
Yeah, what if she gave it to the maid?
What if she gave it to the maid? Like, you were being very sloppy about this. And then he just stabs a lady.
Well, because she doesn't drink.
That's true, because she doesn't drink, because they get her on the phone. They get her on the phone before she drinks the wine. Although, maybe it wasn't even in the wine. Like, who the hell knows?
You don't know.
Yeah, I mean, although I'm going to assume that he knew that she always drank a glass of wine the minute she got home from work. And so, like, he had obviously done a huge amount of research about the people that he was killing. But at the same time, that research does not prove that this is the only guy who drinks from the water fountain. Yeah. Or the water cooler at his office. That one I maintain was quite a stretch. But yeah, it's not a great episode, but you understand why the killer's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really buy how he pulls it off, but at the same time, fundamentally, it's not a terrible episode of the show. It's just a there episode of the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the episodes that's just kind of there and don't think about it too much and you'll have a good time. kind of episode.
I mean, there's nothing much to get you all upset. There's nothing much to...
It's kind of silly. Doesn't make the most sense. But you know what? It's not terrible.
And it's not terribly offensive either.
Hey, and, you know, they do a little misdirect. And instead of the lady being the victim he's coming to kill, it's his boss, played by either Anthony Michael Hall or a man who looks exactly like Anthony Michael Hall.
Well, would you like me to check on IMDb?
Would you just check? Yeah.
Okay.
Let me know. Is that Anthony Michael Hall or is that... I know that there's another actor who looks exactly like Anthony Michael Hall. So it's one of the two of them starring in this episode. It's weird when there's like two actors who are 100% identical, but it happens more often than you'd think.
Well, there's the guy that looks so much like Kevin Spacey.
Yes. Yeah, there's that guy who looks like Kevin Spacey.
That plays Nathan Fillion's best friend.
Yeah, and he was on The Mentalist a bunch of times. And he was on NYPD Blue, and he like, it's uncomfortable how much this guy looks like Kevin Spacey.
I had to...
Yeah. But so there are actors like that out there, and this guy is just one of them. But yeah, it's just a their episode there, and it's one of those things where it's like it's hard to dig too much into the psychology of it, and they give us little pieces of it like that I actually did enjoy, where you're like, okay, well, his mother, he had this horrible traumatic event in his childhood that he never really got over. Then he felt like he never got a chance to have his life started. And also he had to look over his ailing mother. Like you put, he had to take care of a mother who took a long time to die. Like you put all of that together and you, I mean, I'm not saying he was in any way justified, but I'm saying they do get you to the point where you understand where this guy was coming from and why he did what he did, even if it was, you know, way over the top.
Okay, this, yes, all the stressors and everything else. Yeah. If you can buy that he didn't know,
yeah,
that
no, the car, no, but you're right,
he was traveling in,
crashed, killing everybody, killed, and his boss saved his life. Yeah, no, you're right. At the fundamentally, all of it makes sense except for the point that he would have already found, he would have long since, in the same way that I'm like, there's no way that Eric Close can't know his parents were the first victims of the Night Stalker, like were the victims of the Night Stalker, because the same, you know, news things that would have found out that this guy became a hero cop that allowed Tim Curry to find out that would have dug into his past and found out his parents were the victims of the Night Stalker. So it's like, that can't be a mystery, and that episode can't happen that way. So yeah, in the same way, you're right. Like, the episode is built on something that can't have happened. Yeah. All right, so did you find out if it was Anthony Michael Hall or not?
Okay, but what was the character's name?
Well, no, you'll just know if you see Anthony Michael Hall there.
Well, no, if he's
you
not don't, there.
Yeah, then it's there the you go. It's the other guy. Like it's the guy who looks like Anthony Michael Hall.
It's the guy that looks like him.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. All right, next up we have a great big two-parter that is also one of the most baffling episodes. Just a really, really baffling episode of the show, which we will get to as we dig into it. Would you synopsize Angels and Demons, please?
Would you like both or just the first?
I guess just the first, because we'll talk about them in order.
Oh, okay. When a Briscoe County, Texas prostitute is tortured and shot to death and her murder is connected to a six-month-old cold case with eerily similar circumstances, the BAU attempts to determine whether or not the crimes were motivated by religious ideals. Meanwhile, an unexpected series of events puts two team members' lives in jeopardy.
That's not meanwhile. That is what happens in the investigation.
Yeah.
They chase after a guy and their lives get put in jeopardy.
And of course, it's not just the 6-month-old cold case, it's an 11-month-old.
Yeah, there is, they do. Well, no, but they don't initially figure out the guy because
yes, they do, because oh, yes, right, they do, it's right at the beginning because they S.A. Morales says there's one case, right?
Right. And then they find two more right away.
So they go, well, yeah, but is there more than one? Well, yeah, there's, and then Garcia does her, take a look at it. And they find a bunch of them, the other girl from six months before, and the guy from 11 months before.
No, you're right.
Before they leave.
Yeah, you're right. They did find out about both right
away. They knew right away that it was a threefer. Remember?
I mean, oh, no, I remember.
Mostly they have to have threefers before
that's
they
true.
Get called
before
in.
They get, well, no, but this time it's a, they wouldn't have had to because it is a favor that Morales is doing, that S.A. Morales is doing for a friend of his who's the sheriff.
Technically, it is.
I mean, they didn't even have to have two. But yeah, so this episode is so baffling because, I mean, I don't understand a bunch of what happens in this episode, and I'll explain. So there is a thing where they have the craziest line of reasoning I've maybe ever, like, it's terrible because Thomas Gibson this year, I mean, usually, as we've seen, he polices his dialogue as well as you can in a show like this. And he tries to be reasonable. He tries to have his character say smart things, right? But in this season, we get, you know, not back to back, but close enough. We get two things in The Black Queen in this episode where he just says the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard on the show. Like, one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And that is, in that episode, we already talked about, we don't have to get into that again. In this, they have, one of the sex workers who gets killed, right? We hear that they're watching me all the time. That is what she has said.
She says.
They are watching me. I feel like they are watching me all the time. That is unambiguously what she says. And they use it as their justification for this being a group of people doing crimes and not a single unsub. Her saying that. Later, we find out that the evil preacher is not the killer, right? He was just a pimp who used to cut up his prostitutes in when he lived in Alberta. And now the new murdered women are being cut up the same way. And so they have Hotch say, so it's a new single killer using the MO of the preacher back when he killed when he tortured people in Alberta. That's what she must have meant when she said, they're always watching me, that one killer was using the MO of another killer. Like, what are you talking about? How are you even saying this line with a straight face?
Like, I know.
The words you say make no sense. Like, I can't in any way justify. How would you get there? What could the logic of that possibly be? So now I just want to get into, I don't understand anything the villains did this week. Why did they kill? Okay, in the second episode, and I mean, we got to jump ahead a little, because in the second episode.
Okay, so let me read the second episode. Read the synopsis. Okay, yeah. I'll read the synopsis of, because you really can't talk about it.
No, you're right, in isolation, because it makes so little sense.
Yeah.
Because you watch the first episode, you're like, well, I'm sure this will all make sense. When we see the second part, and then you see the second part and you're like, it makes less sense when you've seen the second part.
Yeah. So let's put it all together.
Please.
Okay. I mean, we must now, right?
Please.
So Reed is hospitalized following the shootout with now deceased subject, Justin Mills, who of course is the pimp.
Yep.
The preacher pimp slash pimp. Mm-hmm. The remaining members of the BAU set out to take down a corrupt organization preparing to fulfill a sinister agenda.
Yeah. Okay.
Meanwhile, Garcia inadvertently puts herself in the line of fire. And Blake wrestles with a secret from her past.
Yeah.
I cry.
No,
sometimes
I
have to cry when I read these.
I know. All right. So, yes, as we talked about, I will say this. It is, I guess they must have thought about Blake's backstory all along, or is just incredibly convenient. Because I will say this, like, her relationship with Reed makes total sense if she had lost a kid in this way. And she sees Reed as the kid she would have liked to have. Like, the way she enables him and the way she mothers him in every, like, in, I mean, all last season. And, I mean, less so this season, but a ton last season and a bunch this season. The way she coddles and mothers him, it does make so much more sense if he is exactly the age her kid would have been if her kid lived past infancy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, totally. I get that. I think that's a good way to take the character. And it kind of makes you feel like that's something they had in mind because they knew they wouldn't be getting Jane Lynch back.
Yeah.
So they wanted to explore more with Reed having a maternal figure. We know we're not going to be able to get Jane Lynch back because she's got a lot of work. So I think that was a very smart thing in retrospect when they make this reveal. I think it was a very smart thing to do with the character, and I like how it played in this episode. So yeah, I'm just that there's no criticism here. I'm kind of sad it's her last episode because they actually do something interesting with her. Like they've only done two interesting things with her ever, and one of them is her being a bad partner to her husband.
Yeah.
But this episode really does say something interesting, and it's like I kind of wish we had had more time with her. Since they're able to do this, you know? So I genuinely liked that. But That is the only thing I genuinely liked about these two episodes. Because can you explain to me what the hell the killers were thinking? So here's the situation. The deputy sheriff ran a smuggling ring, right? And and dealt drugs.
Now, technically, it wasn't the deputy. The deputy was, like, it's not clear it's the deputy, but anyway.
I mean, it seems to be his organization.
Well, it seems to be Owen McGregor's organization.
Yeah, and he's the deputy. Owen McGregor seems to be the one in charge, and he seems to be like second or third in command.
Okay, he's probably he's in charge for sure of the whole thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But it's the other guy that was second in charge, the deputy sheriff.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He's
the
actually
guy
second
that
in command of the criminal organization.
Stayed in the.
Yeah, he was always hanging out with them. You're right.
He answers to Owen McGregor.
Yeah, and he clearly answers to Owen. It's a little confusing that the second in charge of the police station is not also the guy running the crime ring. It's just another deputy. But you're absolutely right. And I'm the one who found that a little confusing. So you can blame me for that bit of craziness. But what I found interesting, right, when you're watching the episode is I can't get exactly what happened. So they killed the previous sheriff, right?
So a new sheriff comes in.
So a new sheriff comes to town, and one or more of the sex workers in town witnessed the murder of the previous sheriff. Except at least one.
Yeah, if not more. Yeah,
if not
right.
More.
You get the impression that all of the ones that were killed were ones that saw him kill the sheriff.
Like, you want to say that, but that doesn't really make sense because the sheriff was killed in a quote-unquote drug raid gone bad.
Yeah.
So obviously there couldn't have been that, like, there wasn't six prostitutes in this drug den. Because it's like, it wouldn't be a very good plan to murder the sheriff if you're killing six prostitutes in this drug den, right? Like, that doesn't make sense at all. But the thing is, I think what happened is one of them saw it, right? And then she told her boss, and her boss was using that information to blackmail McGregor and let him, like, give him a cut or let him run his operation in completely, like, completely without interference, is what I think is happening.
No, well, my impression, okay,
please,
is that it was the male prostitute
who had witnessed it.
Who had witnessed it. I would think that he might have told some of the other girls, because right. I don't think the woman who's running the bar slash pool hall has any leverage. She has no leverage over anything or anybody, and there's no one to tell anyway. Because
police department who's evil. Yeah. Except for the sheriff.
Except for the sheriff that came in.
Yes. And this is where I get confused. Okay. And if you can explain this to me. So I don't understand why they don't just kill the reverend. Like, why they go through this elaborate, let's kill a dozen, not a dozen, but let's kill six women and frame this guy, when, like, literally, so the guy in charge, the killer, he knows who's doing this. Like, he knows that he is blackmailing Owen in order, like, using the information that they killed the old sheriff. Like, he knows that's what's happening. So when his girls start getting murdered, wouldn't he assume it has something to do with that?
No, you're assuming he's blackmailing Owen.
But he is, because he on the phone talks about how they had a deal.
No. Yeah. But I'm saying, okay. Okay. Like I'm not clear that that's about the murdering the old sheriff. I think that the preacher, Pim, okay.
What have you?
Had to leave Alberta.
Yeah.
Okay. So he finds this place where they're running. God, anyway, running, we won't even, we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he wants to set up his operation again.
Okay.
And so he runs around the country looking for somebody that he can make a deal with for protection. So he sets up the church. He's running running, but why he would make a deal with Owen, like why Owen would make a deal, because Owen is running everything anyway.
Yeah.
Like it's like this weird idea of.
I don't understand how the criminal organization in this town is organized. I just don't.
The criminal organization has been going on for years.
Yes.
So how does the sheriff, how does this preacher guy come in? Like, if he had come to town and wanted to set up as a pimp.
Yes.
And sucks Owen McGregor and the entire sheriff's department into it.
Yes.
Like it's weird because you don't have any backstory knowing that he got there. Maybe I missed it. Maybe Garcia.
No, he's there relatively recently. Like, he hasn't been there forever.
He's just moved into town.
Yeah.
So why... And he didn't bring his own prostitutes with him, I don't think.
No, he took over.
He did.
I doubt it. They all seem
but
local.
Why would he take over anything anyway? Because unless Owen McGregor needed someone to run the prostitution ring.
Yeah, like the way the crime is organized in this episode, it's really hard to track because, again, it's not a border town. They're sneaking people across the border and they're, also getting drugs from Mexico. And I'm like,
well, okay,
this is as far as you can go from the Mexican border in Texas.
No, but
it is 7 hours away.
So he must get, it says he steals the drugs. He doesn't get the drugs. He doesn't take the drugs from across the border. He doesn't buy the drugs.
He just steals them from people he arrests and sells them.
And then I guess sells them, but that doesn't make any sense. And then I'm looking, okay, like at the end, so let's get to that end where you've got the truck that's full of all of these
people from Mexico.
But then you look at all of the women who are the pimps in the bar. And not one of them is anything but white, blonde, or brown.
He's not using any of the women he's bringing from Mexico. In the sex trade, like, what are these women being brought here for?
There were a whole bunch of men there, like, that ran out of the... So what are you doing? Smuggling in...
Only men? And only to men? Work? Like...
Yeah, like, it's...
So little of this criminal organization makes sense to me.
No, and what doesn't make sense is why he's killing everybody.
I don't understand why he's killing anyone. There is no, like, let's say, I mean, the only motivation, and this is why I do all this stuff about the preacher, because if the preacher had been blackmailing Owen because he knows about the sheriff's murder, I can understand why he would want to kill the preacher. But I don't understand why he wants to start serial killing people and drawing attention. Because the thing is, let's say you don't like this that the preacher is blackmailing you. Right? Because I want to point out, all of the sex workers seem to know that the cops in town are evil.
Yeah, and it's just, and they've been going, but they don't know that the preacher is running the trade. They don't know who the guy upstairs is.
Yeah,
they
do.
Don't know it's the preacher.
No,
and
they're going to
the preacher's church and telling him everything, and that's probably how he found out about the
sheriff. Wait, hold on a second. You think the sex workers don't know that the man upstairs is the preacher?
That's exactly it. Because why then would that girl Brenda or whatever her name was, come running in to tell the preacher and expect the preacher to save her?
Well, but I thought she was coming to talk to him, so to ask him to save her from the cops.
Well, she says
she doesn't
I mean,
think
she
it's her
in
she doesn't
say.
Yeah, no, she's like, she doesn't think that her boss is the one killing everybody. She's the one who was talking about how they're watching me all the time, and she thinks the cops are killing them. Unless I've completely misread that scene,
well,
too.
No, no, I like what I'm saying about this episode is that it could be your ex. Like,
the maybe the girl. Like,
my impression was always that the girls didn't know who the big guy upstairs,
the man upstairs was. But I thought the fact that they only refer to him as the man upstairs, a religious reference, means that they must have definitely known it was him.
Whereas I'm going, but that.
And the fact that she, that like this quote unquote fallen woman runs into the church to get him to protect her. I thought the only reason to do that is because she knows this is her boss and she's desperate for protection. And her madam is clearly not getting the protection done because four of their people are dead.
Yeah, but then why does the preacher go in and beat up the madam to find out who's killing the girls?
I don't understand that part.
Because at the same time, why is he phoning Owen and saying, leave my girls alone?
I don't know.
No, no. As I said, you know, like there's all of these different things.
No, you're right. Because he has no idea. It's weird because the girls know that the cops are evil and watching them all the time and stalking them all the time. Right. But the madam doesn't seem to know the cops are. Oh, no. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, no, wait. No, I figured it out.
Okay.
The madam knows the cops are doing it. But okay. The madam is part of the plan to get the preacher killed.
Oh, yeah. Cause
and that, cause that's why she sends the cop. No, because she's the one who tells him, go see the drug addict. And the drug addict, no, that's it. Okay, wait. That part I did figure out. Yes. The drug addict, Owen has already told the drug addict to arrange a meeting with the person who's doing the killing. And he's told the madam to send the preacher to the drug addict. So no, she's in on it. She's in on the plan to kill the preacher.
Yeah. Well,
and he's blackmailing her.
Make
him the fall guy. Yeah. So she knows that the cops are killing the women. He doesn't know that the cops are killing the women. Although I honestly don't know how he doesn't know, since like the cops are running all the crime in town.
Yeah, the cops run all the crime in town, so
how does he not know the cops are? It's such a baffling episode.
Well, yeah. It's one of those episodes where.
Also, can I just say, there's no way that that anyone can have any information that the cops are responsible for the cops are responsible for the murders. Like, there's no way anyone can have that information because the original sheriff getting killed, because the sheriff was killed by an allergic reaction to penicillin.
Yeah.
You can say, one of the dead guy witnessed the cop shooting. Well, yeah, but even if he came out with that, A, who would believe him? And B, the cops just have to say, no, the male prostitute is lying.
Yeah. Well,
not a witness who anyone will believe.
No. Plus, you could, I mean, even if you had to go to friendly fire, because that's one of the things they ask.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's terrible, but cops accidentally shoot other cops in horrible situations like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, now that we've gone through this, thank you for going through this with me, because I was very confused. I just realized that the preacher can't possibly be blackmailing. I thought he was blackmailing Owen with knowledge of them killing the old sheriff, but he can't possibly know that, because if he did know that, the minute his girl started dying, he would know full well that it was the cops doing it.
Yeah. And so he doesn't.
Right, he can't know, and he has no idea who's doing it.
Which is why.
But he doesn't call the corrupt cops he's working with to help them to get help stopping his girls from getting killed.
After the thing, because he does scream at Owen about doing something about whoever's killing. That's
He only does that after there are four dead bodies.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So yeah.
No. And then why Owen decides, I guess they just wanted to have these shootouts and they just wanted to have Hotch have another fight with somebody.
But it's like, seriously, you guys have picked the worst plan to kill people. Like, if you want to kill the new sheriff because he's suspicious and you want to kill, like,
But the problem is the new sheriff isn't the least bit suspicious.
Of his own people.
No.
He's not suspicious at all.
He hasn't got a clue.
What's going on in his own town.
Because he just got there.
Yeah. Your God, this episode may... There's no way we can, like, track the what happens in this episode to make it make sense.
I mean,
it's just completely incoherent.
And why would all of these cops be willing to kill these FBI agents? Are they nuts?
Yeah, I know. It's madness. Why aren't they just
federal government on them?
I know. You've got money. Just flee.
Yeah. Take like, the money and run.
Like, why are you not just fleeing?
To quote a Woody Allen, the title of a Woody Allen film.
Yeah, but it's like, seriously, just go.
Yeah.
There is nothing to be gained by going to war with the FBI.
Jeez.
Also, why do they think they need to kill Reed?
Oh, because Reed saw Owen and Owen knows that Reed saw Owen.
But that doesn't matter. He had been shot in the neck. He didn't see Owen shoot anybody. He saw Owen walking down the street. Their eyes met.
No, he saw Owen.
Yeah,
running between him and the diner.
Yeah, but...
Not running down the street. And he.
Yeah, but Owen can just say, yeah, I'm a cop. I heard gunfire when I was there, and I was running to check the situation out. Like, I'm just saying, there's no real need to kill... There's no logical need to kill Reed, because even if he says, I saw you there, it's like, yeah, you saw me there. I'm a cop. He didn't see Owen shoot the sheriff.
Because all the other cops would have covered for him.
Oh, exactly.
Because and they're by the all way, part of his system.
I love that their plan to kill Reed is for Owen to walk into the hospital and, I guess, stab him or shoot him?
No, smother him.
But even that's a ridiculous thing to do. You have a sheriff, like a guy in a full uniform, walk into a hospital room. And smother a guy with a pillow in a busy hospital? That's a crazy plan. When you already had a murderous doctor in the hospital happy to do that for you.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you want me to kill him? And he's like, no, I'll handle it myself. Why? That's a much worse way of killing him and a way more suspicious way to kill him.
Well, plus, I mean, when he says that, we don't know that he's got a murderous doctor in the hospital.
Actually, we do, because the murderous doctor phones him to say the FBI agent is alive. Do you want me to take care of it? And Owen says, I'll handle it myself.
Oh, it's him. Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
No, but
that.
I mean, it's hard to... It's easy to... So much crazy nonsense happens in this episode that it's really hard to keep track. Like, I don't... Like, the villains had a really good thing going. They stole drugs from drug dealers. They shepherded people across the border, right? And then their old sheriff got wind of what they were doing. So they killed him. And apart from one or two sex workers witnessing that crime somehow, right? They completely got away with it. And yet they do this elaborate thing that can only serve to draw more attention to their crimes.
So Owen is nuts. Obviously Owen is a
But why are the other eight cops going along with him?
I have no idea.
Like, you've got this really great crime going, but then you just start... And the weird part is, there can't have been more than one witness to the murdering of the previous sheriff. There can't have been more than one witness. They're just... There can't have been. And if you've only got one witness, why do this elaborate serial killer thing? Why not just...
Why try and frame the preacher for it?
Just kill the sex worker. Don't frame the preacher. Yeah, right? Just kill the person you want to kill and then go home. And even if that guy told some of the other people that he was afraid because he'd witnessed the cops kill somebody, even if he had told some of his coworkers... There's nothing they can do about it.
No,
the
person
who actually witnessed this is terrified of the cops.
Owen.
Yes, everyone's terrified of Owen and the cops. And even if he told them, that's not evidence. Like, if I say to you, I think a cop, I saw a cop kill somebody. You say, wow, you saw a cop kill somebody? And I say, yup. And then 2 weeks later, I get stabbed to death in an alley and no one witnesses it. Yeah. Well, guess what? The fact that I told you, I saw a cop kill somebody isn't proof that that cop killed me.
Okay. And first, here's some more things. Okay. How come Owen shot the sheriff?
Yeah.
With his police issue gun.
Maybe it wasn't his. Oh no, it was. Yeah, because he's got. You're gun. Right. He's got a police issue because they're like, I know because we use special police issue only Hydra Shock bullets, and I recognize the sound of it going over my head. And it's like Owen seemingly has access to unlimited stolen guns from criminals. Why is he using his gun and his bullets, his police issue gun and bullets to murder the sheriff? You're right. That makes no sense.
Okay.
Because like his whole plan is to make it look like. Like, he has put two automatic weapons in there for the preacher to use. Why would he not use a third one with the exact same bullets to kill the sheriff?
Yeah.
Because the FBI's there. The FBI's investigating. You're right. That makes zero. I never even thought about that part before.
And here's another thing. Well, except that I do understand this. The BAU always goes in. It doesn't matter. They never wait for backup.
No, ever.
But partly I'm going, they have got Owen and his gang restricted to this junkyard.
Yes.
Okay? They're restricted.
Call in the state police.
Wait. No, they did. And they called the Texas Rangers. They can't wait 20 minutes.
For them to get there. I know.
Or half an hour.
They can't. Owen and company can't flee. There's no way for them to get away. Yeah.
And even this big truck, everybody's going to, I mean, that's going to be so easy to find on the highway.
But I mean, you would have to drive past, but more importantly, you would have to drive past three FBI SUVs just to get that giant truck out of there. You can just block its path, throw down spike strips, you know, like there are ways to deal with this that don't involve you guys charging into a junkyard full of heavily armed rogue cops.
Yeah.
So yeah, nothing that happened in these two episodes makes any sense at all. And then the idiotic cop. Sorry, the idiotic evil doctor who's like, I'm just going to walk into his room and poison him in front of a witness.
Yeah.
As they're telling me not to poison him. Like, what are you doing? Those are two FBI agents, and your plan is to walk into a room with them and just insert poison into the guy's IV. And he's like, I love the fact that he thinks he'll get away with it by saying, I didn't see anything in your chart about you being allergic to antibiotics. Like, yeah, but he just told you he was. He literally, to your face just now, told you he was. How do you think you're going to get away with this?
And all you have to do is look at Briscoe County, right? And yes. Depending on where in Briscoe County it is, Silverton.
Well, Silverton's, it is Silverton, because Silverton's is the largest city.
Okay, so you've got Highway 86, Highway 207, Highway 256.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm looking at all of, like, I'm looking
there
at
is
this
There's one
point,
town of 3,000 people, and then there's a ton of, like, tiny hamlets.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And
so this has to be Silverton.
Like, yeah, so you've got, so let me tell you, the Texas Rangers could easily
be there in minutes. Yes.
Well, if not be there in minutes, restrict access
any
in
attempts
and out
to leave.
Of
oh, no, with no trouble at all.
With no trouble at all.
No.
Like, there's no back roads to sort of get to Antelope Flats,
no.
For example.
It's the middle of, it is the middle of nowhere. They, like, there are three routes, like, there, and they are so far from the interstate. No, there's no way.
Like, you're looking, okay, you know.
You can close down this whole part of Texas with no trouble at all.
Yeah, so why they went in and decided that they had to, you know.
Like, yeah, nothing that happens this week. Because the thing is, it's like, now that we've talked through the fact that the pimp didn't know that the cops had killed the previous sheriff, All I'm left with is thinking, then I don't understand why they think they have to kill eight people and frame the pimp. Just kill this one, kill this one sex worker.
Yeah, that's it.
And then just be done with it. And then you're done. You don't have to come. Guess what? You're the people in charge of looking into it. And by the way, in the 5 months after you started looking into it, nobody found any. They had given up trying to figure out what happened. It was a cold case. And you thought it out by killing the second one. And I don't know why you did it. I don't have the slightest idea.
Like, nobody, see, like, it doesn't make, like, you're going, okay. Like, you just there's can't all these.
Track these anything that happens in these episodes.
But nobody is supposed to think about that when they're watching the episode, because there's a lot of shootouts and there's a lot of fights.
There's a bunch of drama.
Reed is in the hospital and everybody's got to focus on Reed because we all know what's going to happen next.
I know.
Oh, yes, he's going to get the drugs again. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a baffling episode. So, now, with such a weak ending, let's talk about what the best and worst episodes of the season is. Because I've got an easy... I mean, we've talked about this all year we've talked about it. So
the worst is fine.
The worst is the two-parter, and I can't pick one of them as being worse than the other.
No. It's a two-parter.
They're equally terrible. This season started with not only the worst episodes of the season, but some of the worst episodes the show has ever done. Yeah, the inspiration and the inspired are god-awful in every way a TV show can be god-awful. They are terrible. They shouldn't have been allowed to be on television. And they're terrible as episodes of, but they're not just terrible because the content is abhorrent. They are also just terrible episodes of Criminal Minds. They're just bad at being episodes of Criminal Minds, in addition to how disgusting every part of the plots are. So yeah, just nightmares.
Okay.
That is my pick for worst. Do you agree with me?
I completely agree with you. Okay. So I don't have, I mean, we're not going to argue about that.
Okay.
And then when I think like,
I mean, you know what my pick for best is, because it's the sleazy horror movie episode.
Well, of course.
Obviously, now, that was going to be my pick, but what is your pick for best?
Well, I would still say, like, I'm floating between this and that, because there were problems with that episode. It was, in terms of enjoyment, it's probably the best episode.
You had the most fun.
Season, okay.
Yeah. Blood Relations is the most fun episode of the season, I think, by any metric.
And, well, simply because watching those people, like watching Tobin Bell was just...
He's so good.
He was so good and understated, and it was just... Okay, so I do
talented.
Understand. To me, though, I still think in terms of...
An episode of the show.
That's... sort of you, like, from beginning to end works, and it has got a powerful message in the rest of it, and there are so few of them.
You're going with Strange Fruit. We know you're going with Strange
Fruit. Yeah, I'm going with Strange Fruit.
It's a great episode.
You know?
And in any other season, like, I would say that, yeah, that bar none, that's the best episode of the season in almost any other season of the show. I mean, only there's, it's one of the better episodes, period, of the show.
And yeah.
It is crazy that we got to say that in season 9, you know, given how far the show has fallen, but it really is one of the just better episodes of Criminal Mind. That being said, like, it's so much fun watching a crazy Jason type murder people.
Well, yeah,
Kentucky,
no. Blood Relations.
Adrian Barbeau and Tobin Bell just being amazing. And I get why you want to go for actual quality rather than fan horror nerd quality. But yeah, I agree with you on 90% of the metrics on all of the metrics we use to determine what is a good episode of Criminal Minds, it is the better episode.
Yeah.
But if my completely subjective, how did I have the most fun this year? 100%, no hesitation. Blood Relations.
No.
Such a party.
Because I really, like, and you just, the thing about Blood Relations is you can enjoy kind of the whole aura. You know,
the whole experience
of it. It's just, it's shot so beautifully, and And it does, you know, like when I think back, like I know we did the episode and we can rip so much of it and get into some arguments about parts of it that I'm going, that's the only episode where we've kind of didn't come to any kind of an agreement on a couple of things, but that's they true. Weren't important things.
They're not important things at all to the point of the episode.
And in the way that the episode is working, it's backstory.
Holistically speaking, it is just such an entertaining episode
from beginning
in every way, from beginning to end. Just holistically speaking,
and it doesn't have bad. It doesn't. The thing is that it doesn't have what Goobler manages to do with his horror themed episodes, of which we cannot call Gatekeeper one.
No, not at all. It's a terrible episode.
Yeah. But of the ones that he's done, like Mosley Lane and this one and.
The witch hunting episode called? The puppeteer episode, the witch hunting episode. These are all such just like thrilling horror pastiches.
Yeah, and you don't have people doing really stupid things.
Nope. Generally, no. Almost never.
You know, you don't have the horror cliches.
No. Almost, like I said, I mean, the only thing that in Blood Relations, it ends with one, but that's fine. You know, that was it. We let them have that one. It's a good enough episode that they can end it however they want.
And so, it will never be followed up on.
No, they will never bother to follow up on the fact that they never caught that guy. Bravo.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of things that they don't follow up on and.
We're gonna have to talk about that in a lot in two seasons. We have a lot to say about that in two seasons. But for now, I think I can say this is gonna be my final thing.
Uh-huh.
Not only the worst episode of the season, but some of the worst episodes the show has ever done. We're gonna say the inspiration, the inspired. Best episode for me, Blood Relations for you, Strange Fruit. I think we're both right.
Yeah. No.
Because we're both using completely different definitions.
But they're different categories. Like, right. I can agree with you that
it's more fun.
Yeah, exactly. And it does show what people can do when they are given sort of that. Like, I mean, Strange Fruit was very good because it didn't move, because it did have to be in the box. Right?
Yep, because they saved that money and they just told this character-based story, and that's all it is. There is no threat. There is no ticking clock. There is just, here is a story we are exploring, and here are the characters.
Yeah.
And there's nothing one contrived thing, but that's what needs...
Yeah, ignore.
Yeah, but you just ignore it. Right. Yeah. So, and I will say, we're adding an extra category, which is most disappointing episode of the year, and that is Gatekeeper. Because, I mean, like you said, I'm sure there's a story for how this episode is as mediocre as it is. And I would like to hear that story someday, because it is not up to the standards. And it's so crazy, because you watch that episode and you're like, has Matt Goobler lost it? And then the same season, he says Blood Relations.
Okay, and one of his best episodes. One of the most sort of fun episodes that left me laughing at times was Mr. and Mrs. Anderson.
Oh yeah, no, that's a lot of fun.
It was just so, you know, as they're in with the therapist.
Yeah, the marriage counselor stuff, Mr. and Mrs. Anderson. Yeah,
was just fun.
It's fun. It is a fun episode. Weird way to describe a thing about serial kill, you know, like misogynist serial killing. But what are you going to do? Okay,
and he gets caught.
No, he gets his.
I have one question.
Please.
I forgot to ask.
Go.
Why is it called Angels and Demons?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm glad you don't know either. Like, it's Angels and Demons. Okay. So that's the books by what's-his-face who wrote...
Da Vinci Code. If I had to guess, we think of cops as angels, but then it turns out that they're really fallen angels, which are demons. If I had to guess what they thought they meant by these two episodes...
Like, I can't, like, I'm sitting here going, so, was the preacher supposed to be an angel?
No, I think it's about cops.
It's the cops, but you already know there's something weird about the cops almost from the beginning. I know that.
They're incredibly suspicious right from the start of the first episode.
Yes, like that.
You were completely right about that.
You know, and yeah. You know, and there's the old there's the new sheriff going, well, yeah, but it's okay. You know, she means well.
Yeah,
and like, you know, there's something creepy about her.
There's something going on here.
But I think they had money left over from the season, and so in good government way, like this is totally what they do with the government, right? So you don't get. You want to use up your money by the end of the year.
No, absolutely.
You don't want to get
next
cut.
Year. Yeah. Yeah, next year they might cut your budget if you don't use up all of this year's budget.
Yeah, so
I know
so
how
I would
it
say
works.
Angels and Demons was they had money left over because they clearly didn't spend all the money they wanted to on 200. They've been able to cut their something in that.
Clearly.
So consequently, you end up with these shootouts and these different. Sets and things like, you know.
Oh,
like,
yeah, yeah. They had money to, they clearly had money to spend. I think.
And they didn't spend it well. whereas Strange Fruit.
Yeah, they took their restrictions and they really did something interesting with it.
Yeah, Janine Sherman Berroir did something really interesting with that. And, you know, it was good. And as I said, and that's where we found out about the money.
Yep.
About saving money for 200.
All right. So we're going to call it here. As usual, we're going to take 1 week off between seasons 9 and 10 to do to introduce a special feature next Thursday. And this time it's going to be the first 3 episodes of the Chris Noth starring FBI missing persons show Gone. And then we are going to keep watching that show every subsequent Tuesday. But in 2 weeks, we are going to be back with the new episode of Criminal Minds, Season 10, the first 3 episodes. Give them the homework. Tell us what those 3 episodes are.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I mean, we're going to do it again on The Gone, but just in case people want to get a jump on it.
Just a moment.
I don't know that the Chris Noth show is going to be more than one season, so this will probably just be a... couple of weeks from us, but it should be pretty interesting. I haven't seen it yet. You have, so yeah. You're going to be ahead of me, unlike usual when we watch something weird. So yeah. This should be pretty fun.
Okay, so and what I'm going to say is I'm going to start watching Prodigal Son one of these days, and then there's of course Michael Emerson's new show Evil, which I haven't been watching. And probably should have.
The point is, we're never going to run out of shows about serial killers to watch.
No, and Evil. But
yeah, no, absolutely. But what are the 3 episodes?
X,
yeah.
Burn.
Which one is Burn?
When 3 Seattle, Washington men with nothing in common are abducted and killed, BAU sets out to catch a killer motivated by an obsession with a literary master.
Oh, Dante's Inferno episode. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I had no idea it was called Burn. Okay.
It's their 7?
No, I remember.
Anyway, and then 1,000 Sons.
I have no idea what that is either.
A Passenger. Yeah, that tells you how much season 10.
Well, they're not good titles. In my defense, they're also not good titles.
No, Nicholas Brendon is hanging in there too still this season.
Way to go. But,
1,000 Sons. When a passenger jet crashes.
Right.
Field,
okay. Yeah, all kills right.
The vast
right,
majority
right.
of the people.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that completely.
And then Kate confronts her feelings about a family. Who replaces Jeannie Triplehorn?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, that's right. This is Jennifer
Love
Hewitt.
Which is what it leads to it being, and this is true, the most successful season in the history of Criminal Minds. If you ever wonder if Jennifer Love Hewitt has a fan base, the answer is, in their 10th season, they had their most rating successful season ever, solely because Jennifer Love Hewitt was added to the cast. Wrap your head around that one.
And she didn't even last as long as
Jeannie Triplehorn. But that's a whole conversation we'll get into in her season, because there is a story there that we will tell during that season. But for now, I just want to say, as always, thanks for listening. We would love to hear from you if you have any questions for us, comments, or suggestions for profiling and serial killer related fiction you think we should check out. for the show. So drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. If you are listening to this on any kind of a podcast app, be sure to give it a rating because that helps other people find the show. And just tell people if they like Criminal Minds, this is definitely the show they need to be watching, listening to. Damn it.
Yes.
I foiled myself right at the end there. So we will see you back here next week for the first three episodes of Gone, and then in two Tuesdays, so 2 weeks from now, for the first episode of season 10. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.